hard-hitting news. Alternative Talk Radio. Get ready, America, for Deadline Live with your host, Jack Blood. Deadline Live is the daily wrap-up for those too busy in the daily grind to discern and dissect the news. While the so-called mainstream media buries the truth, Jack Blood uncovers it, exposing the lies that our trusted government officials do not want us to know. And now, please welcome Jack Blood.
We are locked in, loaded, second hour of Deadline Live coming your way this 8th day of December 2005. I'm Jack Blood, your narrator and radio gun reporting for the next hour. Of course, we're on the air Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Central Time, 3 to 5 Eastern on the one and only Genesis Communications Network. I encourage you to go to my website, jackblood.com. Got a lot of archives there. Hasn't been updated in a while, and we're just working on that now, but it's still very relevant archives. If you want to make a case about mind control or Big Brother or state-sponsored terrorism or doing business with the enemy, we have a lot of great archives there. Of course, our forums, our message boards are very lively at phase3.org. You can Google that, phase3.org. It's actually phase III, small I's. .org. You can go there and you can sign up for our forums, enjoy the first response news and research that we have there, join our crew where we really get to the bottom of things, and somewhere around 28,000 posts at the Jack Blood forums at phase3.org. We're here today with James Truth, who I've done a lot of work with over the years, and that is, of course, his website. He edits and publish is total411.info, and if you want stuff on 9/11, total911.info, total911.info. And also, just been joined by Mac White, macwhite.com. Mac's book, The Bush Junta, is probably one of the best books out there written on some of the information on the Bush crime family, the wars, 9/11, etc. And it's all done in illustrated format, so it makes a great gift or a great book for people who don't like to read in-depth research and all of those little small words. It's fantastically illustrated. Mac, I want to welcome you to the program. It's been a while since we've had you on, bud.
Yes, and it's good to be back.
Mac Daddy! And I don't know if you know James, but James is also with us. James, thank you for joining us today. I want to continue with you, and Mac, you go ahead and chime in if you hear something relevant. Also, we're about to take calls at 800-259-9231, 1-800-259-9231. James, let's continue along with the timeline and the story. So where we left off in the last hour is that, Yoko Ono rolls in 40 feet ahead, getting out of the limo, wide degree of separation from John Lennon as he is shot in the back multiple times, five times. Of course, no one has accounted yet for the three bullet holes.
Okay, I'm not hearing anything now.
You're up, James. Yeah, I can hear you. We'll fix your audio if we can do that, but you are live on the air. So, again, we can't account for the three extra bullet holes in the window. Let's stop there for a second, James. Were they through and through? Did they go through Mr. Lennon and into the window, or do we have three bullets we can't account for? Okay, James,
hey, I'm only hearing dead air.
Okay, fix James and let me go to Mac. Mac, are you up to speed on this? Do you know that we had three bullet holes going into the window at five into Mr. Lennon?
I don't know as much about the forensics of the murder as I do certain other things, mainly with regard to Chapman's background.
Sure. Well, let's go ahead and go there. I mean, we got so much information here to cover. That's the problem with some of these quote-unquote conspiracies, isn't it, Mac?
Uh-huh.
Hard to fit a conspiracy into a two-hour show because, again, there's so many pieces that need to go together. James, do we have you back with us? We don't. Background on Chapman, Mac White. Give us a sense. Let's get up to speed on Chapman. Who was he? You know, a lot of people are convinced that he underwent some type of mind control and that he might have been a sleeper, so to speak, and that he, in fact, did shoot Lennon. Although, again, there's some contrarying opinions here because we have this doorman who was a Cuban national and mixed up with some pretty weird guys.
Yes.
We're going to get to more of that in a minute. But who was Mark David Chapman?
Yeah, Chapman wouldn't necessarily have had to shoot Lennon. It could have been done by this doorman or another party. But Chapman showed all the signs of having been mind controlled. In fact, the homicide detective who investigated the Lennon case, who was on the scene immediately afterwards and arrested Chapman. This fellow's name was Arthur O'Connor. He stated, he's quoted in the book by Fenton Bressler, Who Killed John Lennon, as saying that it appeared to him that Mark Chapman was in some kind of a hypnotic daze.
Yeah.
And he definitely believed that he must have been or might have been programmed. By
he
Mark
had some Chapman. Sirhan, I guess, formula around him, didn't he? He really did see, he had a lot in common with that. And was there a time, because I'm not really up to speed as much on Chapman, I've read about it, but I must have forgotten some of it. Maybe I'm mind-controlled, who knows. But, Mac, I mean, was there a time when he could have, I mean, it's hard to look back in the background of somebody like this and know, but do you have any specific evidence that he'd done some time with military, or he'd gone to see hypnotist, or there was a way that he might have been turned into some type of a patsy or a sleeper like this?
Well, the interesting connection with Chapman is his association with an evangelical charity group called World Vision, which a number of researchers have identified as being a likely cover for recruiting death squads. The researcher John Judge has done a great deal of research on this, the Christic Institute. World Vision, it would make a very perfect cover for these sorts of activities, for assassinations and so forth, because on the surface it seems like such a benign thing to set up refugee camps and so forth. But these refugee camps are perfect recruiting grounds for, in the case of refugee camps along the Honduran border, they recruited the death squads for El Salvador. Well, Mark Chapman, at a certain period of time in the 70s, worked in a World Vision refugee camp for Laotian refugees, and there were other interesting activities of his, such as when he was working as a security guard in Beirut, Lebanon, at the height of the war there, the civil war. That's a very strange place to be, and it's been suggested that as part of the mind control process, that might have been where he was blooded, as they say.
Yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense to me, and I've also read some of the information on World Vision that makes that a good possibility. What about, we're going to go back to James here in a second, I think we've got him back here.
Yep.
What about using Catcher in the Rye as some type of a trigger? Hasn't that been done before?
I believe that John Hinckley, after his attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan,
James, do you know anything about Hinckley also using maybe Catcher in the Rye as a trigger?
Yeah, he did. And John Hinckley Sr. Was on the board of World Vision, which is very interesting. And the other interesting thing is that in those intervening 3 months, John Hinckley Jr. apparently went to New York and went to all the same places Chapman did during the 2 or 3 days he was in New York.
It's like they were in the same mind control class.
It definitely seems that way, which is why it's so suspicious. And another parallel would be, Mac mentioned John Judge. If you read John Judge's stuff on the Reagan assassination, he says he's got all the ABC News footage on tape, and he saw someone in a raincoat switch out a .38 for a .22. So apparently both Hinckley and Chapman both had .38.
And there were reports, too, at the scene.
Well, hold on to that, Mac. We're going to get that when we come back. Hold on to that thought. We've actually covered a lot, but we still have a long way to go, folks. Stay tuned. Deadline Live.
What I'm thinking here, Jack, is that the terrorists are good for us. Because the terrorists, you never know where they might be.
They could be at my house, Jack. They could be at my back door.
always very controversial, and one of the reasons we have Mac White today is that he's able to break down some of this for us, and also with us, James Truth, who has a pretty good handle on this conspiracy. What we're talking about today on the 25th anniversary of John Lennon's death was he assassinated by the government? And I think that that is a viable possibility, and when you get done listening to this program, I think you might agree with us. Let me go back to Mac White. Mac, you were making an observation on Mark David Chapman before we ran out of time in that last segment. I wanted to give you a chance to finish up.
Actually, I was going to, as long as we were on the subject of Hinckley, just to underscore, you know, the facts behind that case. You know, not only was Hinckley's father on the board of directors of the World Vision, but he was also a longtime business partner of George Bush.
That's exactly right.
And on the day that the attempted assassination was made against Reagan, Hinckley's brother was supposed to have dinner with one of the Bush sons.
I think it was Neil.
Yeah, Neil was allegedly the handler of Hinckley.
Yeah.
In fact, they were. There's a bartender that's testifying that they were in bragging about how they were going to maybe shoot Reagan, or at least hinting at that just a few days before that event.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I don't know, you know, if that's true or not. But there's certainly something very strange. The likelihood of that happening is very, you know, slim indeed, unless there's some kind of very deep connection going on there.
Well, the parallels are kind of obvious, I think, and it's certainly something I think worth debating and discussing on the program today. Let's do this. I want to get more into the aftermath of the assassination of John Lennon 25 years ago, more into Jose Perdermo, who we'll talk about here in a minute, is how it took 6 years to even identify him as the doorman. They tried to pass someone else off as the doorman, which to me stinks of a cover-up. Let's take a couple of calls, 800-259-9231. Any comments you have to add about the John Lennon assassination on today's program? Walter in Texas, thank you for calling, and you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, Walter, thank you for joining us.
I'd just kind of like to make a comment that anybody that doubts that John Lennon was assassinated, was the perfect profile of an enemy of the government. John Lennon was a world leader on the likes of Martin Luther King to many people, whether you personally liked him or hated him.
Yeah.
John Lennon could stand up one time and say, I want everybody to be at the Washington Monument in 10 days, and I guarantee you thousands and thousands of people would be there and thousands
That's
more.
That's right. Walter, where are those people today? Do we have any of those people, especially artists today, that can claim to be able to do that?
They're still out there, and you know as well as I do, conservative or liberal labels, they have succeeded in identifying what they want liberals to be. And, you know, they keep the conservatives thinking the liberals are bad and vice versa. When, you know, everybody needs to remember the liberals were the original enemy of the government. They were the people that took to the streets by the hundreds of thousands during Vietnam. And Lennon was one of their leaders. And
I think Lennon was initially with Al-Qaeda, wasn't he, Walter?
I'm sorry?
Hey, Walter, thanks for the call, and that's a good point, and you're exactly right. That's the point we're trying to make today.
Yeah, really, you know.
There was a motive, right, guys?
Yeah. Definitely understanding, you know, why the government might be interested in assassinating a pop star, John Lennon, is just to look at the government's own documents.
Yeah.
I believe that this is not an exaggeration to say that the FBI's files on John Lennon fill up an entire room, and we haven't seen all of them.
That's right. We're still trying to get some of
those. Yeah, there are tons of them. There was just on your fake news break, Jack, they mentioned how there are still 10 redacted pages.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That we know about.
I'd sure like to see those without all the black lines blocking out all the names and all of the connections. And, you know, I think that there are people alive today who still know exactly what happened here. And I don't know if it's like the Kennedy assassination, maybe we'll never find out. Jeff in Massachusetts, thank you for calling in today. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Very simple. Now, if you look at the song by Imagine by John Lennon, that is the theme song for the New World Order, I think. I mean, look, it promotes global communism. Now, as far as books is concerned, two brilliant books I recommend is Red Cocaine by Joseph Douglas and Betrayed by Joseph Douglas. And it's a good; those two are good general books on mind control and just the way communists perform their tactics, and the fact is, mind control is a very sickening, a sickening field, basically.
You know, I think there's a good case to be made that, that John Lennon had some serious mind control programs working in him up until his final days. I mean, this is the point we made in the first hour that, you know, here's a guy that did a 180 and really changed quite a bit there just before his death. I mean, that had to really worry people.
Yeah, I totally agree, Jack, if I can just jump in here.
Yeah.
Lennon always had a kind of a codependent personality, and to a large degree, what really sent him off the deep end is something I haven't broached it here today, but I have before on the show, is when his best friend Paul McCartney died and was replaced by a lookalike in the mid-60s, he just kind of went off the deep end, and he found Yoko, who helped, you know, helped him deal with this and became his artistic partner, and then started bringing him into these crazy therapies where, you know, he was sitting around in this primal scream therapy where you do things like sit around in your own excrement, and they just really kind of...
Well, he did it all. I mean, there wasn't a mind control program or a group or a religion that John Lennon didn't try.
Yeah, and, well, yeah, that's true to a degree, once he even considered drilling a hole in his head at some point.
Right.
But I think he was joking about that. But the important thing to realize is that he was with Yoko Ono for these last 12 years, and she is something who's someone who's definitely aware of a lot of these techniques and would have been studying them and using them to her own advantage.
Sure. I mean, some of this could even have been done, you know, somewhat innocently, somewhat almost by accident, but the fact is it existed, and I got to tell you, I have to agree a little bit with Jeff in Massachusetts that, you know, if you listen to some of the lyrics for Imagine, just for one example, I mean, it really seems to be pushing the socialist, secular, communist angle, and we really saw that come to fruition during the 60s and the 70s. So I think a lot of us, just like John Lennon, kind of being the euphemism, James and Mac, I think a lot of us are coming out of that mind control.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I can recall, you know, back in the 60s and well into the 70s, having one of those opinions myself.
Oh, sure.
And I think that's what made Lennon dangerous to the establishment, is that he was becoming a loose cannon. He was, throwing off that program.
No doubt about it. Good comment, Matt. We'll come right back. We'll get to Megan in Missouri and others holding and continue this fascinating story. Stay tuned.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Imagine where John Lennon would be today if he was still alive. I'm sure he would be right on board with the Bush and Cheney administration on multiple wars on multiple fronts. I'm sure he would be quiet about this direct attack by 19 hijackers with box cutters on his home city, New York City. Yeah, he would have gone along with all of this. I can imagine that that's how it would be. No, actually it wouldn't have been. He would have been one of the strongest voices against this international war on terror and the death and destruction that's followed it. Guys, I just want to go through a little bit of information and then I'm going to have you both comment on it. Perdomo identified Chapman as the killer. He's the one. When patrolman Peter Cullen arrived, he didn't believe this. He thought Chapman looked too straight, and Perdomo insisted that, you know, this was the guy that was to be arrested. And this troubled Peter Cullen and these other police officers for years. Again, we went over who Jose Padermo was, but, you know, one of the things we didn't get into is that, you know, first of all, I guess let's start with this. Padermo wasn't identified as the doorman or even an eyewitness to this, even though he's talking to the police. He's the one that's identified Mark David Chapman as the killer. They identified the desk clerk on this. His name was Jay Hastings, the bearded desk clerk that actually was at the scene of the crime where John Lennon dropped. So it took 6 years to even find out that this guy, Padermo, was the doorman. And then you've got, as you mentioned earlier, James, Frank Sturgis, one of the Watergate plumbers, another guy who was involved in the Bay of Pigs, who claims that Padermo died somehow, even though there was real no evidence of that. And I guess we can only assume that Padermo is out carrying out a black bag operation even as we speak.
And it's interesting. One thing I posted a couple weeks ago, Jack, as to what he might be up to today. I've noticed that the new director of operations, of covert operations for the CIA, run out of the CIA for this new Negroponte Center for National Intelligence bureaucracy, is an unnamed person named Jose. And it's just very interesting because Jose Perdomo was the guy who was kind of the head of covert operations for Operation 40 when he was down working with Porter Goss in South Florida.
Yeah.
In the mid-60s.
Mac, you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, well, there's a, you know, so many interesting things about this Perdomo character. And whether or not it's the same Perdomo, we, you know, I don't know. But
well, we're assuming it is here.
He's kind of old now, but you know, you can still work a desk job.
Go ahead, Mac.
Well, you know, he was if he was involved in this Operation 40, involved in the Bay of Pigs and possibly with the Kennedy assassination, it would make sense that that would be the kind of conversation he would be carrying on with Mark Chapman, you know, while they were waiting for John Lennon to come back home. It certainly is always a strange thing whenever, you know, a person's name isn't put out there. And then suddenly, you know, years later, it comes up. It's like he's an invisible man.
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes right there. You know, it's why didn't the dog bark, you know?
Well, again, I mean, I think it's rather blatant that the guy isn't even identified as the number one witness to this assassination, to this murder, and isn't even identified for 6 years as the guy that was the doorman. So obviously somebody was in there tinkering around.
And there was a handyman and a desk clerk, and different reports kind of mixed all three of these people up and you know, Perdomo wasn't even there, basically.
And this guy supposedly handled the murder weapon as well. Didn't he kick the gun or something like that? You know?
Yeah, he did.
So there's a whole list of things. If it was just one or two, well, you know, you might could disregard them. But it's a whole list of things about this guy.
What about Fred Seaman? James, you want to comment on this guy at all?
Yeah, I've got a copy of his book. Which is now out of print because Yoko sued him to get it back. But he was an assistant to John and Yoko for the past few years.
He was a watchdog for Yoko over John, primarily.
I don't know. If you read his book, it seems like he was kind of friendly with John and did sympathize with John more than Yoko, I mean, certainly to the degree that Yoko sued him when it came up. And he was there. At the end, he helped steal a lot of John's journals after he died, and supposedly he was going to give them to Julian, you know, I don't know how much, but he seemed like he was a good friend of John. He was with Lennon in Bermuda when he kind of opened himself up and, you know, they did psychedelic mushrooms together and all this sort of thing, but after, when he was removing the journals, it does seem to some degree that some of that information was used in an operation that was primarily focused on smearing Lennon and not trying to get to the entire.
Yeah, in fact, he fed information to Bob Rosen, who I interviewed years ago for his book Nowhere Man. Rosen, who interestingly enough wrote speeches for the Secretary of the Air Force, writing a book on John Lennon.
Yeah,
that's kind of funny. And Seaman also fed Lennon information to Albert Goldman, who wrote that hit piece book on John Lennon.
That I'd like to comment on there.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, it seems to be not enough for these people to kill someone physically. They have to kill their memory, character assassination.
Yeah.
You know, there have been questions raised over the years about the veracity of a number of things
yeah.
in Albert Goldman's book. And
is there any possibility, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Matt, because
yeah.
we're short on time here. Is there any possibility that Seaman also, because of some of the weird connections he's had to people, number one, could he have been a CIA watchdog in that Dakota apartment? And number two, what about the speculations that he was hiding in the dark doorway of the service elevator and he actually shot Lennon?
I don't buy that at all. I think he was mostly friendly with Lennon, and he was out for a buck for himself, you know, to some degree, obviously.
A real scumbag,
I'll tell you. More out to Yoko, and he got involved, I think, with a lot of these kind of CIA types after the fact when he was trying to use the journals to make money.
Yeah.
I think that's where they entered in. I don't really see him being involved in the murder.
Anybody want to comment on EMI? You know, back in the 60s, being behind some of the hit pieces done on Lennon?
I don't know about that. I never heard of that. I mean, EMI, of course, was the record company that made the Beatles records, and they were a huge military contractor, military intelligence contractor. To what degree they were behind hit pieces, you know, I'm sure they're all...
No, allegations they were the invisible hand.
There were wars going on within each other, you know, within the organization.
Sure. Well, those guys are out for money.
Was working for them for at least through 76 when the Apple contract ran out.
Right. The allegations are, and we don't have time to go into all of this, is that EMI was the invisible hand in the 1966 anti-Lennon campaign. So, again, I mean, knowing that these guys are out for money and knowing that they had some nefarious connections themselves, knowing that there was a, you know, all-out character assassination on Mr. Lennon.
That was at about the time, right, when their contracts with EMI were running up and about the time that the original Paul McCartney
died. That's right.
And then that was the kind of big traumatic event there that brought all the Beatles back into the fold of this military intelligence record.
That's why I had you today, James. You nailed that one right on the head. We're going to come back, take Megan in Missouri and others patiently holding. Stay tuned. Deadline Live.
How many people had I already killed? There were those six that I knew about for sure. Close enough to blow their last breath in my face.
Said today, folks, we're barely going to scratch the surface on this, but a lot of, in fact, most of the information we're covering today can be split between the two websites of my guest today. MacWhite.com has his front page all loaded up for you, has the lyrics to Bring On the Lucy for you, also a cartoon I want to discuss with Mac in a minute. Also, Total411.info, James Truth's website, has also a ton of information and links on the John Lennon assassination, and PrisonPlanet.com, John Lennon, Victim of the New World Order, I think is also very relevant. Before we go back to calls, Mac, you're one of my favorite artists. I love your work, and I want to thank you for all the great comic books you've given me over the last few years. Highly recommend your book, The Bush Junta. Everybody should have that. In fact, if you have kids, you want to get them up to speed on what's going on in the world, this might be one of the best books they can get, The Bush Junta, J-U-N-T-A. You all know what that means. And that's by Mac White and other authors, some of which we've had on the program. Mac, I'm looking at one of your cartoons here. Great work on this. 8 years after the Lennon murder, New York homicide detective Arthur O'Connor told a researcher, Fenton Bressler, it's possible Mark could have been used by somebody. I saw him the night of the murder. I studied him intensely. He looked as if he could have been programmed. Mac?
Right, yes. And, you know, Another quote from that comic strip comes from a Dr. Milton Klein, who was a consultant for the CIA's MKUltra program, who stated, and he's quoted here, that it is possible to create a Manchurian candidate in 6 months.
Yeah.
So for anyone that's listening to this and thinking, well, this sounds completely crazy, actually, it's not. The documentation is there that the CIA did engage in experiments with regard to mind control and creating Manchurian candidates, and there's a great deal of evidence, not only with regard to Mark David Chapman, but Sirhan Sirhan, the alleged assassin of Robert F. Kennedy, also Arthur Bremer, who attempted an assassination of George Wallace, and a whole list of others that could just go on and on.
Sure.
Who were apparently programmed, and they don't behave like normal murderers.
Yeah.
The cops show up, and they're standing there, in Mark David Chapman's case, they're standing there with you know, staring into space, you know?
Yeah, yeah, history is really littered with the bodies of these so-called lone gunmen, and we really have to kind of perk up our ears almost whenever we hear this. James, before we go back to calls, you want to comment on some of this stuff?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to mention that I think I've got the first photo on the web of Jose Perdomo. I put that up on my site earlier today, so that's up there. But yeah, on these Manchurian candidates, it's always a parallel operation in the way that these work when they're not trained from youth or something. When they are done in 6 months, they're usually not reliable enough to hit the target, so there's always someone else there to make sure that the target is hit. We saw with Sirhan Sirhan, I think most people suspect that RFK's security guy, Eugene Thane Caesar from Lockheed, probably is a good chance that he was a real gunman. And then Sirhan's psychiatrist was also Hinckley's psychiatrist. And when we look at the Reagan thing, we find out that in the interview Reagan gave to the AP right after, he said he didn't feel anything until the Secret Service agent threw him in the car. And like maybe the Secret Service agent cracked a rib. And that's where they found a very strange small projectile, which is what they later went back and said it was a 22.
The coincidences are just astounding, aren't they, guys?
Yeah, and, you know, isn't it funny that the limousine that was supposed to be carrying Reagan to the hospital got lost?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing was Reagan was still conscious enough, and he knew it was a hit, and they wanted to take him to Bethesda, which, of course, is where they did all those trips with Kennedy's body, and he made them turn it around to the George Washington University Hospital, which, first of all, was much closer than Bethesda anyway, but he and Nancy were on top of enough of that to get them not to the Naval Hospital. And in fact, Michael Gilson DeLemos, I think his name is, he's a writer and a libertarian politician in Central America. He says his mother was at George Washington University Hospital, and Reagan fired his Secret Service and got a Navy ship that had freshly docked and got the sailors right off that to act as his security, because he was not comfortable with his position.
Yeah, no kidding. The plot certainly thickens here. I've got to get to some of these calls. So, Megan in Missouri, you're next. Thank you so much for calling and for holding. You're on the air.
Good. Thanks for having me on. You know, I just wanted to thank you for doing the show today, because I was probably about the same age you were when he got killed.
Yeah.
I still hate to hear that Christmas song, because it's too sad. But
sure.
And I guess I'm, you know, kind of behind the loop on, like, finding out more of this info about, you know, I always knew it was horrible what happened, but I really didn't know about any kind of assassination behind it, but it makes a lot of sense.
They're not talking about it in the big tributes to John Lennon today. None of this is getting mentioned.
No, and what they're talking about on TV is that the whole reason that Mark David Chapman went after him was because of the comment he made about being like Jesus,
right,
or bigger than Jesus. And it's just so ridiculous. But and I guess kind of James answered one of my questions a little bit, but maybe you could talk a little bit more about at some point about the McCartney thing, because, you know, I don't think John Lennon would have been let himself become a knight, and I don't think he would have sold all their songs to Michael Jackson for a song either. But and I just would say too, you should buy Mac's book for a Christmas present, because it's a great book.
It is one of the best books out there by far, The Bushman by Mac
too.
White.
It's good.
Got a fan there. Go ahead, James. There's
Lennon,
your opening. I'm still not convinced about this whole Paul McCartney thing, but there are some glaring differences. John Lennon would have allowed himself to be knighted and sold his songs to Michael Jackson?
No, Lennon sent back his member of the British Empire medal that the four original Beatles got in the wave of Beatlemania. And, of course, with this McCartney golem, we saw him with a propaganda song after 9/11 and you know, showing up at the Super Bowl with Bush and Clinton and being knighted and you know, all this crazy garbage.
We'll take a quick break, come back. Patrick in Kentucky will be our last caller. Stay tuned, folks. Deadline Live.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. Working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool.
Amazing song written by John Lennon. Another verse. They've tortured you and scarred you for 20 odd years. Then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear, a working class hero is something to be. Guys, we're almost out of time. Thanks. You've done a great job today, and I want to get Patrick in Kentucky for a quick comment. Patrick, I got about 30 seconds for you, man, so put something on the record for us. You're on the air.
Yes, I hate being the last caller because I wanted others to be able to comment on what I'm saying. But
okay.
I did meet somebody that had connections with the NSA, and he did live with Mark David Chapman in Hawaii for a while, and said that, you know, that there are definitely Bush senior connections between that and the Reagan administration. And I also wanted to make one other comment about, as far as the 2008 election, I don't think Hillary, I think they're going to try to pop up another unknown on us, like Carter, Clinton, that kind of thing.
Mitt Romney is what I've predicted, the governor of Massachusetts, who's a Bilderberger and a real New World Order minion. So
there's
we're
a
looking
Virginia
out for that. Hey, Patrick, I'm going to give out James. Do you have a contact information so Patrick can contact you and maybe feed you some of the information that he has?
Definitely. Totalinfo@gmail.com. And if you don't like Gmail, email me and we'll go to another mail.
Totalinfo@gmail.com. Patrick, get a hold of James because he's been really documenting a lot of this Beatles stuff. Real quick, well, we got the George Harrison burglary, funny enough, and George Harrison dying of cancer. We've got the fake Paul McCartney, as you claim, James, and the death of John Lennon, who I believe today, if he was still around, he'd be standing shoulder to shoulder with Cindy Sheehan up in Crawford, Texas. Might even be on this show as a guest, so we can only hope, we can only imagine.
I want people to check out the video about the New Orleans levees being bombed on my site, too. That's a very important issue, and people can't forget New Orleans as we hit.
Great website, total411.info and macwhite.com. Make sure to get that book to Bushwick. Mac, I'll see you real soon down here in Texas. We've got to get together and have a beer.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, you guys, for being on the show. You did a fantastic job. Folks, we'll be back tomorrow, Open Mind, Open Line Friday, and we kind of did that today. So, wow, we really let loose on you tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining us, folks. Thanks to all our sponsors, all of our callers, all of our guests, and, of course, GCN and Mark doing a great job running the board today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same channel, Genesis Communications Radio Network. Until then, I'm Jack Blood saying be bold. And mighty forces will come to your aid.